KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM. This is a replay of last week's Finding Me program for my Voltron Legendary Defender rant and the disservice to queer characters that has been done.
Gary, buddy, you probably haven't seen me in a while. I have some things to rant about, and I'm going to get into it right now. You can see the hashtags and the links in the description of this video, so please check that out. I'm going to explain to you some stuff that I haven't been able to share a whole lot because I've been busy. I'm also right now live on Periscope, and hopefully people are watching me there as well. And you can check that out at Nemo Potatoes if this stream doesn't pan out for you. But it's just not as fancy as the one for OBS. So, let's start at the beginning. Voltron Legendary Defender is a animation that is airing on Netflix with the collaboration of DreamWorks Animation Studios and Studio Mir in Korea. So I've been following this cartoon for a while. I thought it was really fun and cool, and I was like really liking the characters. Like, some people know that one of my favorite characters is Keith. He plays a role as the Red Paladin of the Red Lion for most of the series up until he switches to his best friend Lion, the Black Lion, after taking Shiro's place as the head of Voltron. Since Shiro, spoiler alert if you haven't watched, he died. And then Keith did everything he could to save his best friend's life, despite all the things that they were going through. And then it was revealed along the way to the story that while they were piloting their robot space lions, that they had found a magical Black space princess who had lost her family, her world, and her people. And for people who have a historical that history of genocide to their people, that's like really heavy, and it's a lot. And on top of that, this princess, she had to deal with the burden of her father's legacy and his super weapons. The space lions, the Voltron lions. So, and I'm trying to be as concise as possible while I try to find my feelings. So I'm sorry if I get rambly, but this is probably one of the only ways I'll be able to sort out through my thoughts, and I'll try to help you understand what I'm feeling, how I'm feeling it, and try to connect my thoughts because this is just going off the rails. The season 8, it's got a total of 8 seasons. It's reached its completion, and I've loved Voltron. It's been a good show. I've liked the characters, I've loved the story, and it has compelling and gorgeous animation and dynamics that I have not seen in animation in a while since, well, watching Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, or something as decent as, what is it, Madhouse Animation or something? That studio. Also, Studio Ghibli in its own right. And I suppose the reason I'm mad about this is the disservice the characters have gone through in their growth. So I'm going to start with Lance. So Lance, you know, a lot of people mistook him for the main character. And I'm starting with him because, well, the first scene actually opens up to, like, Kerberos, which is supposed to be a moon of Pluto. And Takashi Shirogane is one of the few people who has the privilege and honor to go collect ice samples from there and bring them back to Earth, and is one of the farthest points that humans had ever traveled. During that time, Shiro is kidnapped by an alien race known as the Galra, and he is held captive for a year before he returns to Earth in a Galra ship. And then he is then detained by the Garrison, which is a government facility, government military facility, which kind of works both as like some sort of like military institution as it does its own like government agency, I suppose. And so like one of the first things we learn after he's been captured is that we go to the other characters, Lance, Hunk, and Pidge. And Lance is a new pilot. He wants to be one of the best pilots there is, but he's not quite there yet in terms of his development. And so he gets scolded early on by his instructor, and then he decides to hang out with his friends to, you know, do something fun. So he and Hunk leave the garrison barracks after hours, and they find Pidge listening for signs of something, and they ask them, "Hey, what's going on? What are you doing? What are these tools?" And Pidge tells them, "Okay, well, I wasn't going to tell you, and you can't sell this to anybody, and also don't touch my things. I'm listening for the signal," and it all keeps saying is Voltron. I don't know what that is. So they see the crash of Shiro, which I mentioned, and the government detains them, and so they get close to figure out what's going on. And that's when they find out that Shiro is in there. And Shiro, to these young students at the garrison, is a hero. And Keith then comes in, creating a distraction using explosives to rescue his best friend. And the reason I know that Keith was Shiro's best friend is because while Lance knows Keith by name and recognizes him by his image, by a mullet comment, I recognize that mullet. I know for a fact that Hunk probably doesn't care because he doesn't really make much comment about it other than his fear about approaching the garrison detaining tent. So, but Pidge doesn't know who Keith is. So the next scene opens to Keith busting into the tent and taking down three guys who are detaining Shiro, who is strapped down to a table and has been knocked unconscious when he is trying to bring a warning message that the Galra are coming for Voltron and they need to find us before they do, because they are a rather vicious alien race at this point, where they will stop at nothing to get the Voltron lions and take over the universe. So, you know, Keith approaches his best friend and cups his jaw, and like his eyes shimmer in recognition. And he, you know, he says, "Oh," you know, well, he doesn't say, "Oh," but like, it's like, "Shiro?" And it's like, okay, so obviously these two know each other. They're best friends. Lance enters the scene and he starts picking a fight with Keith right away. But at this point, I mean, the logical step is to get everybody out, because obviously they're going to be in trouble for interfering with the garrison at this point. And so they bust out of there. And we establish that, okay, we got to find these Voltron lions. And Keith has been kicked out of the garrison for disciplinary actions, supposedly, because he was lost for a while. But he does have some sensitivity to some energy in the area, and so it led them to cave drawings in the desert, to signs and prophecies that there was going to be something coming. And he said it in such a way that he felt like for some reason these connections specifically pointed to his best friend. And the way Shiro looked at him was somewhat pitiful in the sense that, I am so sorry this happened to you. And that helps to establish for me, because in that particular scene, they're only talking to each other, Shiro and Keith. And so, because of the fact that the other three characters have been left out of the conversation, Shiro politely reinserts them into the conversation and introduces himself. Fast forward. They find the Blue Lion, and the Blue Lion is activated by Lance as he is chosen as a paladin. Thank you. I couldn't handle the reading. Sorry. I appreciate that you appreciate my recap of this opening season. And I think it's important to talk about it because I want everyone to know and understand where these characters are starting. Let's see. Where was I? So they get in the Blue Lion. Lance activated it. They bust out and they leave the planet. They're being chased by a Galra cruiser. And they make it to planet Eris, where they find the Castle of Lions. And then, after that, what happens next is they find an unconscious princess and her advisor, Karan. The princess is named Alora, and she is the princess of Altea. And the last thing that she remembers was that her father had put her to sleep and put her in a pod, and she only realizes once the paladins have awakened her that they've been asleep for 10,000 years. In which case, that means the Galra have been running around, wreaking havoc upon the universe, and have probably taken over a good portion of it for that long, and probably have, you know, hands everywhere. And so it's going to be a difficult fight, which is established. And then they have, what was it, 3 days, basically, that was translated from their Altaian language, because they were talking in ticks and doboshes and all that. That's just some nerd stuff. Anyway, so they go get the lion to come back. They do a fight and they form Voltron. Great. But in that process of getting the Voltron lions, there is more bonds established between Shiro and Keith. And Shiro tells him when they have to split up to help Pidge find a hint of their family, because when Takashi Shirogane was kidnapped by the Galra, he was also with Pidge's family, their brother Matt, and their father, Sam Holt. And when there was a chance that Pidge could find their family, Shiro took up on that offer because it was the right thing to do, even though he really wasn't into the idea of splitting up, nor was he into trying to get distracted. But because Pidge is now an ally in this battle, he figures, fine, I'll go with you. Keith, you're going to have to go on your own, find the Red Lion by yourself. And Keith in this moment is like, without you, I just found you, dude. You're my best friend. And Shiro reminds him, patience yields focus. And to the audience, it's like, well, what does that mean? Because apparently that means something to both of them, right? So again, reestablishing a past that they have together as friends. And at some point I hope, I wonder if we're ever going to see that in later seasons. We do. And I'm not going to go over that right now. But that much is true. Later, when Keith is alone and he gets frustrated trying to find the Red Lion, he repeats to himself Shiro's words, patience yields focus. In a strange way, the scene sets itself up as if Keith is psychic in a way that is unexplainable beyond human interpretation. Like he can actually see beyond what can be seen. All right, so once that is established, you understand that not only does Keith have a sensitivity for energy vibes, which is how they found the Blue Lion in the first place, I forgot to mention that, but he's so sensitive that he can also sense other Voltron lions. So he sensed the Blue Lion in the area, and he also sensed the red one. When he finally does get it, they bust out. And they form Voltron. And throughout the series, we get to understand where Alora is coming from. Because, like I mentioned earlier, in this dream, she lost her father, her planet, and her people. And that's a really tough thing to deal with for people who have been hunted to the point of, you know, genocide and near extinction. And it's happened to, you know, even this, our own Earth. And I identify with that because as a Mexican indigenous person, that happened to a lot of us, especially when the colonizers came over to do that. And Voltron, at this point, the writers had established that they wanted to go beyond what we know as Earth and what is considered progressive. And they wanted to set up a world, and it was really bold of them, I think, to set up a world, a utopia, where there are no borders, so people can travel where they please, where racism apparently doesn't exist, and neither does any sense of queerphobia. And I was like, wow, that's a bold move. You're really going to try to create a world that doesn't exist quite yet? Well, I guess I'll be seeing how that works out for you. I look forward to it. So I sat there for season two. And then we understood more that there was something more to Keith's heritage than we might imagine. The non-human aspect, as I mentioned before. And we realized that he has Galra heritage because, and I forgot to mention this again, he has this mysterious knife, which was also the reason he was able to release Shiro from the strap, strapping him to the table and all that. And he cut him out with that knife. So we find out he's Galra, but in the worst, in a very tough way. And it was painful in such a way that I identified with it because I've been there where I did not know who I was. And mentally speaking, I was not in a good place because I did not know who I was. I need a moment. This is an emotional part for me to identify with, to know that there is a character that I can relate to in terms of finding yourself, finding out who you are, finding out that the reason that you're so weird is because you're kind of an alien. And I relate to that in many ways. I relate to it in a queer way because I am queer and that's how I identify. I relate to it as an autistic person. And maybe he's not autistic, but I relate to it. And I know other autistic people do as well. And I relate to it as a Mexican trying to find myself and understand the things that I do in my family and why we do it. Like, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for my mom? And growing up, there were times that my mom had to leave me in order to survive. And in order to survive, she wanted to ensure my own survival as well. So when we were trying to figure out Keith's heritage and he finally met his mother, I vibed really strongly with that. So I'm going all through all these characters for a reason. And like I said, I stan Keith or whatever. And I was talking about Lance as well, and I sort of diverted off topic because I'm just ranting. Lance's character was done a disservice as well. He created a insecure sort of rivalry with Keith. And at first, I didn't like him. And for some people, that's understandable. We're not into the people who pick a fight with us for no reason. And that was kind of me. I was trying to mind my own business, get through the world, succeed. And sometimes, we succeed without even trying. Because we were generally just paying attention and minding our own business, studying, and doing well. And Keith, as anyone knows, has the focus of tunnel vision. And once he focuses, he can get anything done and do it superbly. Lance seems to be jealous and insecure about that fact, and so he projects his insecurities onto Keith, who already has insecurities of his own, and basically sets him off. Lance eventually had to see his teammate Keith go once he had learned about his heritage with the Galra. And Keith had joined the organization, a rebel organization known as the Blade of Marmora. So while he did that, Lance finally had space to himself to figure out the growth that he needed to do. Because up till season 3-ish, he was very antagonistic towards Keith. Very insecure at any time when Keith got attention, especially from Shiro, who is his hero, as it were. And, when Lance managed to figure out that he did have a role that was good, he learned that he doesn't have to be someone that fights well the way Keith does. He doesn't have to be smart or technical like Pidge or Hunk. And he doesn't have to be strong the way he sees Shiro being strong. He can just be himself and he can still serve an important role to a cause anywhere. And to Voltron, which talks about teamwork. And Shiro even establishes early on in that first episode, even though he was a former military person, that he doesn't have to control what they do, even though he's their senior officer. And he told Lance and the rest of them, we make this decision as a team. And so Voltron establishes itself not as, you know, one is greater than the other because they are the Black Lion, because they are the Red Lion, because they are the Yellow or the Green. They are all equally important. And without one, there is no Voltron. So there has to be mutual cooperation. Do they have interesting abilities that are very unique and powerful? Yes, they do. But they, again, are unique and powerful. But they cannot defeat any one particular enemy without being together. So, when Lance had time to not focus on Keith and whether or not he was being outshone, he started focusing on his teammates and what his worth was to them. And when he did that, he realized, oh, I can still be a supportive person, even if it doesn't seem like I'm shining brightly, because he really is shining brightly in those moments. And he learns to be more humble. And when he does that, he's able to unlock abilities that he could never have thought of. And in the first episode, it's established that he, you know, he likes girls a lot. I haven't seen him flirt with guys. So that's a thing, and that's what I expect from most cartoons. He plays the, you know, I'm interested in girls and, you know, I'm just having fun. I like attention and, you know, people do that. And for me, that was just a little annoying, but I didn't hate him. The only thing that bothered me was the way he was just antagonistic towards people to the detriment of others. And then when he kept floating back to Allura, the princess, it started to grow into something more. He started, once he had been rejected by her multiple times, he started to fall back a little. He started to become more introspective in his role as Voltron, and when he did realize that he needed to be a supportive role, he figured that out through Allura. And the way he did that was when it was presumed that Shiro was dead, or at least missing for a very long time. And what happened was, he began to support Allura when, after she had to destroy her father's hologram, which was, like, one of the places she would go to for advice and wisdom, she had nowhere else to go to except Karan, and sometimes, when you have a secondary father figure, it's not quite the same, and you can't really get the same wisdom. And sometimes it's not what you're looking for. But Lance started to be more supportive of her. So season 3 onwards, there was the Lion Switch. Keith took up the Black Lion's helm, and out of respect for Shiro, remained in his red paladin armor. And this was indicated by Lauren Montgomery and Joaquim dos Santos. He became more humble and learned that he cannot take up the Black Lion himself. And leadership is not, you know, always important skill to have or a place to be, because sometimes that's not what you're meant for. And that's not a terribly bad thing, because you do need supporters to follow the leaders, right? Otherwise, what leadership is there if there's no followers or someone to back that person up? So he becomes the level-headed person for Keith during his emotional turmoil when he is feeling very hurt about his best friend Shiro's disappearance and possible death, which for him is unthinkable, which is why he doesn't stop for possibly months, as headcanons go, from searching for Shiro. And Lance says, okay, I know you're hurting, but you have to get your shit together, and you have to understand that Allura is new at this paladin thing, because she becomes one of the paladins, well. And that's how Lance moves from the blue lion that he first set out with to the red lion. And so and Allura took up the blue lion in Lance's stead, which helped fix the lion shuffle. And Lance grew from being a little bit more gentle with Keith, but still remaining honest. And instead of feeling hurt, Keith took that honesty to heart in a less hurtful way. And also, they started becoming at least better friends and allies after that. Teammates, proper teammates, without getting antagonistic. And if they do get antagonistic, they both know that it's just giving each other, you know, shiz. And I'm censoring myself for the sake of radio, but that friendship becomes established. And the more that Lance learns to be a supportive role, the more he fits really well into it. And every time that Allura has her self-doubts, he's there to comfort her and let her know it's okay, we can screw up sometimes, and we just have to move forward knowing that sometimes we screw up, or, you know, and we can't fix things sometimes, but we have to do what we can to, you know, clear up the damage. It happens. And so they start forming a vaguely romantic bond. But the thing is, Lance has already stopped flirting with Allura, but he's realizing that he's falling very much deeply in love with her for who she is as his friend, rather than just the pretty princess from Altea. And a wrench is thrown in the gears when we have the Lotor introduced. And we learn that he is the son of the zombie Emperor Zarkon. And we're introduced to him, you know, after Zarkon is defeated in season 2, at the end of season 2, along with the disappearance and slash death of Shiro. And he gets close to Allura, and that makes Lance insecure in a way which really helps to figure out his feelings about Allura. But he still remains supportive of her, even in this relationship that she is forming with Lotor. And even when it turns out Lotor did some screwed up things, he supports her after that fallout without going, I told you so, or anything. He's just like, sometimes we screw up and we make the wrong choices and we meet the wrong people and that happens. And it's like, man, that's probably the most humble I've heard of Lance in a while. And I have to congratulate him for that. So, endlessly, he's just been like, you know, stay safe, princess. Stay safe, Allura. I care about you. If you need any help, I'll be there. And, you know, that's what real, you know, forming bonds is about, is, you know, starting out as friends and then moving towards something deeper if that's how it goes, and respecting it when it doesn't, and continuing to maintain that boundary unless that person begins to reciprocate. So, you know, then that Allura is hurting after that fallout with Lotor, to to anyone who is watching. And what happens next is, to my audience, I'm recapping all these seasons for a reason. And the reason is season 8 just was
KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead 88.1 FM.
Wasn't the same. All right, so by now we've reached season 6 for the most part. I talked about Keith. He disappeared with the bomb for seasons 3 and 4, and we didn't hear from him for a little bit. We got a couple episodes where we were like, oh, okay, he's still good, doing good. He's just, you know, busy on missions. And other ones, we saw Shiro experiencing interesting symptoms with his return, like headaches and strange behavior. And anyone who was, like, paying attention to Shiro's character, like me and other people, were like, something's going on. This isn't Shiro. But it is. It looks like him, but also doesn't. I mean, we made a joke about his hairstyle is not very good. And some of us were like, I think it's still cute. But in the end, it turns out that some of us were right about things. And if you're like me, you were a little crazy, but very much correct. Because back in the day, about a year or two ago, whenever season 6 came out, I don't even know how long it's been. It's been just forever. Was it March? Probably, of this year. And I had theorized that, based on the other theories, that people were like, Shiro is dead, and this is a clone, and I don't know who this one is. And other people were like, what if this one is a clone, and he doesn't know it, and it's just going to sit there like that. And some people were like, what if Shiro is a sleeper agent, and this is our Shiro? And I was like, thinking to myself, okay, here is a wilder idea. What if Shiro is dead, this is a clone, and the clone is a sleeper agent? Would you believe me how shocked I was when he snapped and it turns out I was right about all the things? It was so screwed up, man. And so Shiro turns on the team. Not of his own volition, of course, since, like I mentioned, sleeper agent. Behind all that has been the witch Hagar, or, as we find out, her true name is Hanerva. And she was the former queen of the Galra, and she was formerly an Altaian as well. And she had been studying quintessence. So, when she became a witch, she did scientific experiments on a lot of people, characters, and most definitely Shiro, considering that when he returned to Earth, he did not have his human arm anymore. He had a Galra arm, which seemed to glow purple with a lot of heat. And at some point, he had to use it on himself in order to cauterize a wound. When this clone sleeper agent dead Shiro plot finally came to fruition, when Lotor was discovered as someone who had killed a lot of Altaians in his quest to protect Altaian culture, Alora got mad at him, threw him, and they were going to probably lock him away or something, or make him face justice of some sort. And the only reason that they discovered that he had screwed up majorly in his past, despite him always wanting to do the right thing, even though it was hurting a lot of people, Shiro, you know, grabbed him, and that's when, like, the switch was flipped, and Hagar took Shiro over. Shiro then ended up fighting all of the paladins and setting up a bomb in the castle to destroy them, including Keith. So Keith realizes now, because he's been with his mom, and he was also in the Quantum Abyss, and he was able to foresee the future. And in that future, he saw that he would have to fight Shiro at one point. So what does that mean for someone who's your best friend, you have to fight them at some point, and for why? and you have to sort of mentally prepare yourself for the inevitable. Like, do I avoid it? Do I confront it? What do? Do I accept it? So when that time comes, and by this time he's met his mother, and his demeanor changes in a way that makes sense to me, because once you do figure out who you are thoroughly, because it's one thing to be like, oh, that's who I am. Well, it's quite another when you get to the source of it. Like when you understand why your mom left you, who she is, getting to know her, etc. And I understand that because every now and then I have to reconnect with my own mom, who I love and adore. And then we have those deep, meaningful conversations to reconnect ourselves, to make sure that we're still on the same page. And it's good. And I imagine that the 2 years that Keith managed to hang out with his mother was a healing experience for him, to have that focus on him for a while when he didn't have it before. And when he had to fight Shiro, there was a lot of things that he knew he was going to have to hear. One of them was I should have left you when your parents did. Now, Keith's dad had died in his childhood when his mother had left him as a baby. So it was a tough childhood as it was. And Shiro was the one who reached out to him in his time of need and helped him enter the garrison and stuck his neck out for him when he got into a fight. And to stay in the garrison, he would do that. So when he realized that Shiro would do that for him time and time again and never give up on him, he took that to heart. And he really appreciated that from his friend, and that he could actually count on him to be there when he needed it. And so I think in a way, Keith promised himself that he would do the same for Shiro, because that's, how you would pay your respects. Give and give and give. That's how a relationship works. It's a two-way street. Shiro gave Keith his faith in him, and Keith did the same. So it was an equal trade. So when Keith heard, I should have left you when your parents did, he was like, meh, you don't mean that. I'm going to take you home. you're a little bit cranky, but whatever. And, I say that in joking, even though at the time I was a emotional wreck, because it got super personal. And it was such a harrowing experience that when they were fighting, he had revealed to Keith that he was a clone, because he had shown him the clone facility. And on top of that, they were going to fight to the death. And so it was just a matter of, okay, well, Shiro has been a mentor figure and a supportive pillar in Keith's life, to his path to becoming a somewhat stable human being. And when it came, when push comes to shove and you're between, a rock and a hard place, etc., there had to be a decision made when Shiro had him pinned and nearly destroyed on the ground. And Shiro was about to make the killing blow. Keith blocked his blow, and as a last-ditch effort, he told Shiro, because even though it was a hologram before in Season 2 during the trials and figuring out his heritage, he told Shiro, you're my brother. And, just to convey that you're important to me. And at least that much I got. Some people, well, I'm not going to talk about them, but they have their misinterpretations. However, during this particular episode, he emphasized his point with a declaration. Shiro, you're my brother. I love you. And when he said that, the camera pointedly switches over to Shiro's expression from an expression of vicious, monstrous anger, or, just to terrify Keith, I'm sure, to one of shock, which is an iconic trope for, between friends and lovers, when your friend is brainwashed and you have to snap him out of it with a declaration of love of some sort. So, when he did, Shiro returned back to his self. Well, not quite, but it was like you see it in his eyes, like, what? Keith thinks of me like that? And then he goes back to being mind control, and he says, you know, you gotta give up. I killed everybody on the castle, even your mom, sort of thing. And it was just like, ooh, how is Keith gonna take that? And, well, Keith doesn't take it, and what happens is, Keith takes off the Gaara arm that is controlling him, thus severing his connection with Hagar. And the whole time, Hagar, had instructed Shiro to return her son to him, Lotor, and also distract Keith, because Keith, the Red Paladin, has a deeper connection to him, deeper than the others. So she wanted to exploit that, because for her, that was a weakness. And in this case, it was his strength, because when the cloned facility fell apart, and Keith had a choice of whether to save his own life or save Shiro's if he was able to, he chose that if he was going to die, if Shiro was going to die, then he would die with him. And most of the time, when you see a mentor and mentee relationship at a platonic level, you expect the mentee to surpass them in some way, whether it's through an epic battle and defeat, or, which for me was, I didn't think it would happen, but Keith would rather not be alone in the world than to let go of Shiro. And so when that clone facility fell apart and he had his mother's blade in a like slab of the platform or whatever, he let go, or at least he fell with the blade in his hand still, and they were falling, and Keith looked like he was ready to accept whatever happened. In that moment, he managed to be rescued by the Black Lion that was nearby, and he made it out alive with Shiro. And he also woke up in the astral plane as well, right before that, realizing that Shiro's consciousness was in the astral plane, and he did not know why yet. But, I think he did actually in that first scene, but Shiro told him that he had died. And it was a deep cut for him, because the whole time, Keith was looking for someone who was already dead. And that was a deep blow. Now, you know, so far, this is a deep romance, as far as anyone can tell. And maybe that's all it was ever going to be, and that was fine. Some other people saw it as a potential to be romantic, and that's also cool. What maddens a lot of people is the fact that their friendship was entirely scrapped during season 8. You know, like, hey buddy, associate. That's how it went, basically. What are you doing for your mission? Da 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 da. Great. Anyway. And it's just like, dude, I thought you guys were friends. You're not going to hang out anymore. You're not going to, like, have a dark humor joke about how fast you fell from the sky. What the F happened? That is not fair to them. Especially when you get your announcement where Takashi Shirogane is a gay man. So can straight people and gay people, whether or not they are the same gender, hang out? So is that what happens when I talk to my straight friends and it's found out that I'm gay? Do they hang out with me anymore? Are we no longer friends? Do we barely talk to each other? I certainly hope not. Kind of sends a bad message for me, even on the platonic level. Including that, season 8, once again, spoilers, something happens to Allura. Her arc was also terrible, and she grew from dealing with her father's legacy to becoming a magical black woman, which was amazing, by the way. She learned of her father's chemical skills as an alchemist, and learning the secrets of Oriand. And she is also the reason that Shiro was able to transfer his soul from the Black Lion to his clone body when Keith had retrieved it. Even though she was not able to keep Shiro's body in there, Keith did by making sure to beg his best friend to stay in the Living Realm. Somehow, that worked. Do we know why or how? We don't. It's not explained. Magic. I guess when you love your best bro that way, that's how it works. But comes off as awfully romantic. At least in my opinion. Although it doesn't have to be if that's how you feel. For those of you who are still here, I appreciate you're here. I'm just going over the past seasons because I enjoyed them a lot, but I did not enjoy season 8. Back to it. Allura, you know, now growing up from being able to help revive a Balmera, which is a living planet that if you harm it, you know, it actually hurts and the planet dies little by little if you keep taking and taking from it. And in a way, I feel like, you know, maybe it was unintentional, but a metaphor for our own Earth, that if you keep taking and taking from it, it will die. And so will the people who live on it. So when she revives the planet, there's already indication that she has great things in store for her, in terms of healing abilities and possibly revival of life. So when I learned that she took a dark turn in the final season, well, one, in season 7, she was starting to acknowledge that she may have feelings for Lance. And I thought, ooh, that's really sweet. Because she had learned through her telepathic mice that, oh, Lance loves me. And he's not telling me directly, but he loves me. That's really sweet. And she doesn't approach him about this. And she's like really shy about it. And so she just kind of like, you know, lets that truth sit with her. And that's cool. She doesn't have to do anything with that information, but she has it. And so at some point, Hunk helps Lance in the beginning of the season. And, you know, these are one of the few things that I actually do like about the season 8, even though for the most part, I felt emotionally hollowed afterwards. He asked her out, and the thing is, considering the fact that, as I mentioned, Allura has lost her family, her planet, and her people, she has formed a friendship with Lance. And Lance, as anyone knows, is probably one of the few babies of his family. He has a couple older siblings, and he has some nieces and nephews, and he has his mother, father, and grandparents in there, and aunts and uncles. It's a big family. He's, you know, he's a Cuban boy. And so, you know, on the Latinx perspective, I identify with that. And so this goof managed to snag a date with Allura with the help of his friend Hunk, who kept pushing him to be a little bit more assertive on that end. And thankfully, Romel, who was the person who revealed Lotor's past, pushed her as well to take him up on the date. So that's set up. And Lance promises him her on that date that, you know, I can be your family. And I'm like, oh, that's very sweet, because Allura does not have a family. She only has Karan, which is the closest thing to family, but that family is very small. So once you have that in mind, it's really sad to me when she has to deal with the end of the series, which does such a disservice to her considering her magical abilities. Because in the previous season, Lance had died saving her life, and because she had seen his action, she went out of her way to leap out of her lion. Reminder, she is a blue paladin now. And she went over to revive his soul. And he lived again and saved his life. And that's when I knew, like, you know, she really feels for him despite everything. And I thought that I would see some way for her and Onerva to go head-to-head, because now she has magical abilities just like Onerva does, but of a different capacity and with different motives in mind. If you were paying attention to Voltron, you would also know that Onerva, during her quintessence studies, had opened a rift, and in that rift was quintessence, and quintessence is a form of energy that you can get, which helps fuel things and helps people, which is like living longer. And you can technically harvest quintessence from a planet, but also it's also to the detriment of that planet to harvest quintessence, which again serves as a metaphor of the livelihood of planets, taking care of them, and maybe you shouldn't be taking and taking and taking. I don't know. So I thought the logical step here was that Allura would go head-to-head with Onerva and maybe teach her of why Onerva's ways were wrong, because she did things based on, like, you know, love weakens you, whereas Team Voltron operates on love strengthens you. You know, love between your friends and family and the fan family that is established. And on top of that, you would think that Allura would go that direction where, you know, Onerva would know the meaning of something greater than quintessence, and that thing would be love. Unconditional love. Agape, if you will. And maybe Lance would support her in that endeavor to defeat Onerva, and it would be really cool. But it wasn't, because what happened was there seemed to be no hope for Allura. Apparently, she had to sacrifice herself in order to fix the problems that Onerva was causing, which is not limited to, but included, kidnapping a bunch of Altaians from one of the colonies that Romel came from, and also destroying all realities, trying to find the one reality where Onerva would fit in so that she could have her family back. And what happened to Onerva's family was more or less, like, entirely her fault based on her lust for power. And in that lust for power, she caused damage to herself and to her husband Zarkon and to her son, ultimately. Because they ended up dying, and she ended up dying pregnant, actually, now that I think of it. She didn't even remember who she was. That's how long gone she was. And she took on the name Hagar from a nurse that was trying to tend to her. What's bothersome about this is that despite her actions, she does not pay for them in a sacrificial manner to actually redeem her. I would have seen it as a way, like, you know, maybe she accepts defeat at the face of true love. In terms of, like, you know, it doesn't even have to be romantic. It could just be the paladins being supportive of each other and being like, you know, this is, you know, the real power that's greater than anything else. Because just recently in season 6 and 7, it was established that you could fight a quintessence field, and if you just help focus on each other and on Allura, you can take out a super bad mecha with Allura's magic. And it was like, no biggie, right? Well, why can't you just do that again, if not better, on Onerva? I don't get that. It doesn't make no sense. So instead, Allura sacrifices not only, you know, have Onerva have her happy ending as a villain, but Allura does not get that happy ending, despite the fact that she has now established a relationship with Lance, which now is rushed instead of that slow burn that I was seeing before, where they were slowly drifting closer together as friends and eventually just starting to date a little bit, which was cute for the most part, until it suddenly got rushed and they became the tragic romantic couple. And most of the time, I don't like badly written romances for either queer couples or for straight couples. I mean, I made jokes about this on my previous shows back in the day, that Frozen, like, was trying to do something different for Disney when they were like, you can't just marry the first guy you see, sort of thing. But at least, you know, Alora and Lance had an established friendship, and it was going somewhere, but it didn't. So Alora sacrifices herself, and when you watch it, you're like, oh, that's so sad, and she's no longer in the Blue Lion. She, you know, her body's not there. And some people might think, well, wait a minute, what if she's, like, still in the Blue Lion, like, her soul's there, kind of like Shiro was? I mean, who knows? I don't know. We didn't know. But I think what the gut punch was, for the most part, was the fact that in the epilogue, which many fans thought was either fake or real, we cannot confirm it, because for the most part, it looked so awful that it was unthinkable. What it showed was Alora seemed to be dead, because the paladins were older and they were posing in front of a statue that seemed to be kind of like a memorial for Alora. And we were like, what's that about? What's going on with that? That is just so weird, because the paladins have grown close to Alora in such a way that you would think that they would try to stop her from getting herself killed. They've always been that for each other. I know that, you know, Keith and Lance have been for each other to make sure they don't make stupid decisions together. And I know that Shiro and Keith have obviously been there for each other as best friends, which was already pre-established and definitely, like, you know, okay, highlighted in The Black Paladins, which is an animation masterpiece, if I might add. And it's like, okay, they would ride and die for each other. And I know that Pidge does what she can for her family, and Hunk, despite the fact that he is afraid of a lot of things, he still gets the job done. And that much I can appreciate, because I've been there, and a lot of times I'm scared of a lot of things, including, you know, how I'm going to feel. But I have to learn that sometimes I have to do things I don't like. So it just bothers me that none of the paladins stepped up when she was making her sacrifice, like, or considering a sacrifice. Like, no, Alora, don't do that. It was more like, oh, no, Alora, you have to sacrifice yourself. No, don't go, you know, don't go away. You know, like that Willy Wonka meme or whatever. And it was just really sad to see that for her. Was it probably pre-planned? I don't know. So I saw those, like, epilogue cards where, you know, she was a statue memorial, and I was just like, what? She can't be dead. She's a magical black princess. How does she die? She has the ability to heal and revive people from the dead. That's not possible. Especially, you know, considering that Onerva is alive, and I don't know, she could fix her own problems in a different way that still lets her continue to have her family without destroying all realities. Or at least resetting them. So, like, why? So it gets even sadder when we're told that Shiro is gay. And it's like, oh, sweet. That's cool. That, you know, he's the queer representation, because he's a very masculine coded character. But he's also quiet. And mostly reserved. So he's not like a flamboyant gay person. Which is what a lot of people will go to for their stereotype. He's not like that. So it's nice to have a little bit of a twist on that as well. He has PTSD. And that much was seen in his character characteristics. He, you know, he's also disabled, considering that he lost his arm. Even if it's technically, even if he has the essence of having an arm at all. And this season, you know, he's, well, in the past, he's always had the support of his paladin friends, including Keith. That's, you know, goes without saying. And he's always there for the paladins. He helped Pidge every time they needed to go out to find their family or any problems they had. He helped Alora feel welcome among them, because he insisted that she had every right to go with them on missions. And he has been there for Lance to feel more secure in his role as a paladin of Voltron. And he was being able to hang out with Alora too. And, well, I already talked about Alora, sorry. It was established, at least, that he, well, for sure, his friendship with Keith. I was hoping, maybe, that at some point he would talk to Hunk a little bit more. But I think the most that he got out of Hunk was that instead of eating space goo all the time, was Hunk's affinity for flavor and spice.
KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM.
And being able to eat some decent meals on the castle. I'm pretty sure Shiro appreciated that and the contributions and the courage that Hunk has, despite his fears. And I think that makes him a stronger team. So it's just really weird for me that even though Shiro is gay, he's not allowed to interact with any of his male friends. He hardly interacted with Lance. He hardly interacted with Hunk. And then he only mostly interacted with either Alora or the other staff crew on the Atlas, which was his new role. And he's only the only guy who can pilot the Atlas because it's connected to his arm, which contains a gem from Alora's crown. And what's sad about his epilogue card is the fact that it says he found his happiness and left the battle behind. And in those images that crushed many fans, regardless of what you shipped, and this is not a ship problem, it's a shoehorning problem. Because we were promised that romance would not be shoehorned in it. Because, for one, this is a robot lion show. And while it's cute to see people date or whatever, we don't actually see anything more than that indicated, at least on the straight end of things. And when you get Shiro being married not only to someone that we don't know as an audience, it just feels hollow. Like, because suddenly he's gay, so therefore gay men can't be around straight men, and they definitely can't be around other people in general. Because, you know, what if they come on to them, right? That's what I got out of that. And it was even sadder that his friendship with Keith was pretty much gone for the most part. And it was just really sad. There's even strange cuts to the editing that I could point out to at a later time. But that's neither here nor there. And I'll have to show you that later. And I think that I'm most upset about Shiro because of the way he was sidelined like that. And I didn't think he could. Because he's been the champion. He's been a space explorer. He literally broke up with his boyfriend just so that he could explore space. I mean, what is that about? Hmm? He found his happiness and left the battle behind. That's not the Shiro I know. The Shiro I know would never give up his dreams. He literally ditched his relationships to find his dreams. So why would he settle down with anyone, period? If he's going to be married to someone, he would be doing it in space. That I understand. So, or I would appreciate it if he were put with someone along with going in space that has a pre-established relationship with him. And let's just take a wild shot. Let's say that after garnering a friendship with Alora of some sort, maybe they got together in the end. Although, at this point, for the epilogue, she's dead. Now, let's move on to Lance. They have become friends, although they're not really that close. They're just kind of like, you know, they're allies and stuff in a common cause. And Hunk, also, there isn't much of a relationship there. And most of the time, Pidge, Hunk, and Lance see him as a hero. So it's not quite the same as a real friendship. And then you have Karan, who is an advisor of sorts, and you can get some wisdom from, but it's not the same. And, like, it's not quite the same friendship. I could name one friendship that was more doable. Maybe it was not in the cards. But I do know for a fact that the epilogue was not there in the first place. And maybe I can show you the evidence. And this was me just ranting a lot of how Shiro no longer had his friends, when the whole theme of Ultron is the power of friendship and love. Where does that go? What is the point of Ultron if there's no friendship and love in there? Why do kids have to watch a cartoon with these concepts and themes, and then it just falls flat? Is there just no hope if you have friends? And if these kids happen to be queer, is that what happens to you? You just don't have any more friends when you are revealed as gay? Do you, if you're a woman of color, are you expected to fix everybody's problems? Even if you're just a woman, period, a white woman at that, are you still expected to solve everyone's problems? I don't think so. I hope not. Women of color, or women, period, shouldn't have to be fixing other people's problems. Keith, again, he's my favorite. His character was done a disservice as well. In the recent seasons, he got to know his mother, become close to her, and even, it could be even be implied that she trained him better after seeing, well, how poorly he was able to sneak into a mission with her. He said she would set up tests to test him, even impossible tests that were not meant to be beaten, to make sure that he was always on his toes, ready to handle anything. And it reminds me of my mom, where she puts me to the test on things I don't like, or things to make me strong, or just to, you know, be able to handle the real world. He went from, I love you, Mom, to Krulia. Like, did we just not go over the fact that this is his mom? The writers could not have forgotten that. They've been consistent up to this point. What the hell happened? This is not how you write a story. This is not how you write a story. They've all been done terrible justice. Probably Hunk and Pidge were the only characters that had the most realistic ending. Hunk creates a culinary empire, but then again, he's reduced to that role, just food. And for a fat-sized character, what does that mean? I mean, come on. Because during season 6 and 7, he was starting to grow into his role as a diplomat in such a way. But I suppose that's how they connected it to food. But at the same time, that doesn't make any sense either, because during season 6, he decided to go out of his way to understand Galra history. And with Galra history, he wanted to understand how they operated, why they do what they do, what motivates them. And that's how he learned about the concept of what Vrepitsa means and what Palinbol means. Now, frequently throughout the show, you'll hear the Galra salute with Vrepitsa. Vrepitsa, as he would learn, means the killing thrust. Now, fans will joke about that, and that makes sense. And I joked about it too. It's funny. But also, for the Galra, they used to be a nomadic society on their ancient planet, which was then destroyed by Anerva and Zarkon, considering their actions with the quintessence testing. They were on their planet Dibazol fighting other tribes. And using a killing strategy, or whatever, called the killing thrust, to, you know, get past their enemies and be able to create their communities. And I was like, oh my god. You know, as a Mexican, that just reminds me of how Mexicans went from Aztlan and traveled south. And when they did, they would frequently get into fights with other neighboring nations and tribes, and then they would mingle with others, and they create an empire. And we had this thing called the Flower Wars. And so they would then have people pay tribute to them and all of that. And I've talked about that here before on my show. So, like, oh my God, I've been talking for an hour just ranting and rambling, just going off. And this is why I put it on my own page instead of somewhere else. So I felt like the Gawara felt kind of Mexican to me. And I thought that was cool. And Hunk was learning about that history. But now, Hunk, he's just talking about food. That's what his thing is now. He's not, like, learning more about the culture of other alien planets, or at least it's not really communicated well to me that way. And Pidge, despite the fact that she did find her family in the end, her and her family would be to create the new generation of legendary defenders. And I was just like, what? I don't know. I felt like instead of Allura being sacrificed, that somehow Voltron, one of the universe's greatest weapons, would have to be sacrificed in order to fix the whole reality rip, considering the fact that it's a trans-reality mecha. So you would think by destroying it, you might be able to fix it, including all other realities, by making sure it's destroyed. But 'twas not the case. It was not in the cards to have a sensible and actually good storyline. Lotor, he was also done an injustice for a lot of abuse victims, and they should be heard as well. Lotor was born after his mother's death. She was already zombified by her quintessence accident by then, and she had him at that time, but she didn't remember him, and also didn't realize at all whatsoever that Lotor was her son. That did not register to her at all. So, it was kind of unfortunate, and Zarkon could only figure out that, okay, so this person is important to me, but I don't remember why, so I'm just gonna keep her around. And, the most that Zarkon figured out in his zombified state was like, okay, do you know how to work with quintessence? And, like, Onerva has, like, this flicker of memory, like, oh, yeah, quintessence. Yeah, I know how to screw around with that. And it's like, and Zarkon's just like, great, amazing. So Zarkon, considering that now he's this, he has got no memories, no love for Onerva or who she used to be, and doesn't even realize she doesn't actually know her name. Again, reminder, she took the name of Hagar the nurse that was trying to tend to her, and she ended up killing. He tried to raise Lotor using Dayak, and which is something similar to a governess for Galra, I suppose. And Lotor, little by little, would be raised with a Galra education, values, and while he did not excel in some areas of usual Galra ways, he was able to excel in others in terms of his intelligence, which was really nice. He was a smart kid. He even picked up his mother's cat and vaguely helped her remember that her cat's name was Kova. And that Kova was one of the first few experiments of quintessence, which in you can tell because the cat has lived for a very long time and doesn't look as, not quite as healthy looking. Like, you know, the cat's a little bony, on the bony side. But you can see then that Lotor later on bases his armor and uniform based on his cat. It's kind of cute. And while Lotor did not know who his mother was, he went on a search for her. And that's relatable, again. But considering the circumstances, he was not allowed to find out who his mother was. And when he did, he learned of Onerva and who she was. And maybe he did or maybe he didn't want to acknowledge that on Nerva was Hagar. And it was really sad how that came out in the end, because he wanted to help the Altaian people, whereas his father Zarkon wanted to destroy them. And the one time that he tried to protect them, Zarkon had him knocked out, and the planet Altea destroyed. It was really, really terrible. And Lotor could do nothing about it. So I think the most that Lotor could do was try to find a way to honor his mother in a way that he thought was right by researching more quintessence, but at the cost of using Altaians who volunteered themselves to his experiments. And I don't think he realized at that time how much wrong he was doing. Was it right? Not necessarily. Was he wrong? Not really. It's kind of a gray area. And sometimes it's okay to have gray area characters. They're unique and they're special in that way. I liked Lotor. He was cool. At least I thought he was, and he still is, even now, to me, as a sort of gray area villain of sorts. But I think the disturbing part for me, at least in the final season, was for a Y7 TV show, Vor Voltron, I had to see his melted corpse. For some people, that might be a bit much, and I'm probably never going to show that on my show, because it's a bit much for me and many other people. And some people are okay with that kind of gruesomeness, but I feel like it's a bit much for the Y7 rating, and it would probably be more appropriate for a vaguely PG-13 area, which might be a little bit more helpful in that area. Maybe PG, maybe parental guidance. Yeah, that was not the way that I would go about showing that he was dead. There was many other ways. I mean, a limp hand would do, really. Like, oh, he's lifeless, you know, not melted corpse that look vaguely like vines and is rather squeaky, as it were, squirmy and icky. So that just set off a lot of crawls under my skin. So Lotor was done injustice, and my thoughts are scattered right now, and I'm really sorry about that. But I just wanted to put out all of my ideas about why I didn't particularly like the season, and also voicing the concerns of others that I listened to, and some of those were in my explanations today. So all the characters ended up reverting in some way or another to their season one selves, or just shells of what they were before, and that's just really sad. Voltron did not do well. And so, let me just add that, contrary to popular belief, the fans have been kind of, it's been dramatic. Let's just put it that way. And by dramatic, I mean, there's been ship wars. We know this, some of them. And some people are even annoyed by ship wars or hate shippers in general. And I get it. There are some people that are a bit much. But, you know, you don't have to feel bothered to harass them either for their feelings. And I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that, because I'm going back to Shiro again because he's also one of my favorite characters, that it feels disingenuous to put him in a relationship with someone that is just like a non-character that we barely knew or could connect to. Because if he found happiness, then why don't we feel happy for him finding his happiness? Unless, you know, you're okay with empty representation that is meaningless. I would rather he had stayed single at that point. Because obviously he was very happy to transition from the Black Lion's paladin to captain of the Atlas and being a best friend to Voltron when it needed help, because that's what he did during season 7. When Voltron was down, he stepped up and did amazing things by transforming the Atlas into an even bigger mecha. And I was like, holy crap, they did that. And I can't wait to see more of Shiro protecting his friends. Didn't happen too much. Kind of sad, unfortunate. And I was even looking forward to the fact that, you know, when Keith had stuck out his neck for his best friend, Shiro, just as Shiro had done it for him, Shiro didn't do that season. And I suspect there was a lot of executive meddling and really, really bad writing to patch up those holes. And maybe another time I will do that. I think I've told you all what I think of the recent season, but I feel like it did injustice to the following groups. People of color, queer people, women, a mix of all three, a mix of a couple, maybe just one of these parties. But when you harm marginalized groups, when you're striving to do representation by claiming that you know what better representation is, that's a lie. This is complete BS. You cannot fool us. You cannot fool 15,000 people into thinking that this is a decent season at all. I will come back to you with more thoughts as I sort through them, because I've been nothing but angry, sick, and tired for the past 3-4 days since this season was released. Appreciate you all listening. So, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this program, and now I will let you know that the way you can support the petition that I had linked on Facebook and Periscope is tinyurl.com/freeVLDS8, which stands for Free Voltron Legendary Defenders Season 8. Sign the petition and support proper queer representation instead of shoving characters into the background. Queer characters do not deserve that, and neither do our stories. Thank you. Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kpppfm.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kpppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kpppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.